Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. The collapse of a factory building near Dhaka, Bangladesh, killed, we're not sure the exact number. If you have numbers for me, please send them out. There are close to 400 people now that we know have been killed, over 1,000 missing, over 1,000 injured, and the worst accident really in the history of the garment industry, worse than what you study about, some of you study about in our history books, the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory Fire of 1911. Worse than that, that was something that helped spur on legislation requiring improved factory standards in the United States. So this is a factory making the inexpensive clothes that you buy at the stores all across America. So there are a lot of issues here, trade issues. There are issues about our culpability as consumers. Does that exist? What is happening in Bangladesh itself? What allows these conditions to take place? And then some of the more complex issues about the 3 million, mostly women, who work in these factories and how even this little bit of work has changed their existence. So we are joined by Amara Jones, economic justice contributor for ColorLines.com. And he also served in the Clinton White House, where he worked in international trade policy. Amara, welcome. Always good to have you back with us.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Charles Kernighan is with us. He is director of the Institute for Global Labor and Human Rights. And Charles, welcome.
Thank you.
Karen Lee is with us, studies industrial and labor relations at Cornell University, and is a student organizer for United Students Against Sweatshops. And Karen Lee, good to have you with us as well.
Thank you, Mark.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Our Twitter is at Mark Steiner. Or you can jump onto our Facebook pages, and I'll see if you've written there. But please join us with your thoughts and ideas from across the country and across Baltimore. Let me just begin, Charles. You have people on the ground in Bangladesh, right?
Yes.
So tell me what you're learning and what the latest news is.
Well, it's at least 408 people accounted for death. Death toll has gone to 408. Like you mentioned, the police are saying that up to 1,000 workers are missing. I find it hard to believe. But it's definitely going to go sky high, the death rate. At least 650 people are seriously injured. I'm talking about multiple amputations and so on. This is absolutely horrific. And the garment owners, they decide what the law is. The workers haven't a voice at all, zero. Yet it's the workers who have to pay the ultimate price when they're killed. So this is just just one other accident, but it's the worst in the history of the garment industry. But this is just normal in Bangladesh and many other countries.
Well, I'm going to come back to you in a moment, but to kind of probe a bit further and the things you're learning and what these issues are on the ground there. Imara, tell us a bit about your perspective on this as part of United Students Against Sweatshops.
You mean me, Mark?
I'm Karen. Excuse me, Amara. Okay. Then we'll come to I'm sorry. Karen?
Yeah, I think this tragedy is definitely a sombering reminder of the sweatshop conditions that still exist in the garment industry. And at the end of the day, you know, brands aren't being held accountable, and it is the brands who place these downward price pressures on factories and factory owners to cut corners on safety agreements with the workers. And at the same time, workers really need to be empowered at the workplace because, you know, their working conditions the best. So, yeah.
And Imara, how about this in terms of one of the areas that you know a great deal about, which is trade, international trade policy? I mean, does this come into play at all, given that we are one of the major consumers and importers and our businesses are the ones who kind of contract with these factories to make this clothing?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are two things. One, it's a natural consequence of the way in which trade has been structured and has revolutionized the way in which we do business. I mean, we normally think of that there is one company that makes something that we consume. So, you know, if we make you go to Sears, you buy the dishwasher, for example, the dishwasher was made in a specific place, and that place may be China, or you go to Walmart or JCPenney and you buy a shirt, and that shirt was made in a specific place, et cetera. But what's happened, and one of the consequences, is that we actually have subcontractors of subcontractors of subcontractors. And so what comes to us as a finished product and that may what may be assembled in one particular country may have dozens of components, or that are that come from any number of places. The cloth could come from one place, the buttons could come from another place, the shirts come from another place, and that does two things. One, it's very hard to monitor. Monitoring then becomes really expensive. One of the reasons why we like the structure of the trade. Hello?
You're here. You're still there,
yeah.
Mara.
Yeah, one of the reasons why we like the structure of the trade regime that we have now is that it diffuses cost, but the consequences, one of the reasons why it does so is because we've spread manufacturing over such a wide area. We've held down labor costs. Labor is usually not included in trade agreements. Environment's not included in trade agreements. And so costs are held down, and that means that accountability is held down as well. And secondly, it's a highly competitive market to manufacture clothes. One of the things, as you alluded to earlier, is that countries want these jobs. Low-income countries want these jobs, even if, you know, they do pay $38 a month to individuals, as I think was the case in this Bangladeshi factory. There are still more people in the world than not. These can be relatively better wages than could be earned from agriculture and other things that exist. And so that high competition also means that that companies will go where costs are lowest and costs is lowest, where oversight is less, and where there's less regulation. And that's one of the problems that we have now. And things are moving so quickly. And so I can locate my factory in China one day. 5 years later, China becomes really expensive. I move to Vietnam. 5 years later, Vietnam becomes expensive. I move to Bangladesh. And so that means that corporations and these subcontractors and companies are always one step ahead of the regulatory regime that we normally think of place that protects workers and saves lives. And that's just not the case here.
And so the question is, I mean, When you look at Bangladesh itself, Charles, I mean, one of the things that I read in the New York Times, one of the op-ed pieces that we'll talk about in a minute, was in the entire country, there are only 18 inspectors for these factories. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, more or less. Much worse is the fact that the workers have zero opportunity to organize. And this creates like slave labor conditions, because there's 5,000 garment factories in Bangladesh and there's not one single factory with a collective contract. And that's not by chance. Workers are really being disenfranchised. I would put this pretty close to slave labor.
So what should be, as we sit here in America with this, what should be our response? I mean, A, what should be our response as citizenry? And B, what should be our response in terms of our political and governmental response? I mean,
our government does very little. But the main thing is that if you look at the garment industry, they have laws for themselves. So the labels are protected by intellectual property and copyright laws. So that if you make a knockoff, you're going to go to prison.
Right.
If you're This sounds very reasonable, and we agree with that. But when we say to these same labels, can't workers have similar rights for worker rights, International Labor Organization standards, the same companies come back and say, oh, no, that would be an impediment to free trade. So, frankly, the workers in Bangladesh have had enough. They get the helpers get 12 cents an hour, the junior sows 22 cents an hour, senior sows 26 cents an hour. 80% of the women are very young, 18, 19, maybe up to 25, to 35, they're thrown out. Workers, and we've been there dozens and dozens and dozens of times and have actually interviewed thousands of workers, they refer to themselves as slaves. There's no way out for them. And the labels don't care. They could care less. And at some point, there's going to have to be legislation that holds these labels accountable. Otherwise, we're just going to have more accidents like this and more horror shows.
And Karen, so talk about what you think our response should be.
I think definitely on the student and on the consumer side, there is pressure that we can apply on brands. Just last week, students and workers had an amazing victory over Adidas over sweatshop violations also in Indonesia, in a situation where Adidas basically cut and run and denied any responsibility for legally owed severance to the Indonesian workers. And I think this situation was a great example of workers organizing on the ground to apply pressure on the brand for brand accountability and responsibility. But also students across the nation were able to get, build solidarity also, and also across the Atlantic in Europe. And in the result, just last week, we heard that Adidas agreed to pay a substantial sum of the $1.8 million that was owed. So in that sense, we do have power here as leverage as students. It was the largest collegiate boycott. Over 15 schools ended up cutting their business contracts with Adidas. And so it's things like this that we hope will have a ripple effect over to other companies as well.
I wonder again, when we talk, when you're listening, Amara, to what Charles Kernan was saying about the labels could care less. Are there any kind of governmental responses that can make them care more?
I think there are two things. I think one, we, through the World Trade Organization and even through our own government and the way that we negotiate these trade agreements, can push harder on labor rights. I mean, that's now in the Obama administration has done that, but it can become more so. And there are global agreements on textiles. And so there's the opportunity because of the existence of these in order to be able to go in and to push for those to include now labor provisions for workers. I think that's one thing that we can do. And secondly, the other thing our government could do is we provide support for governments to engage in all types of what we call capacity building. So if governments don't have strong health systems, we'll invest in the ability for them to be able to create them. And if governments don't have educational systems, right down the line. And one of the things that we could do is to help governments, particularly those that have large textile industries that are new, to begin to strengthen the ability to have a regulatory system for themselves with support from the United States government and technical assistance to be able to do that. Now, that would be probably controversial with American businesses, but I think clearly the American people don't want to have the clothes that they get and buy, cheap as they are, to come with the price of someone else having lost their life. And so I think this is on both of those areas are places where things can be done so that this doesn't happen. This isn't only about a labor response, although that's really key, or a corporate response. All of these entities operate in rules, and what we need to do is strengthen the rules so that these things don't happen.
So, and Charles, and Karen, let me get you back in here, and start with Charles and go to Karen. I mean, one of the problems here, someone just wrote in an email, texted saying, what a choice, slavery at home in Bangladesh or slavery in Dubai or the Gulf? Mm-hmm. And I think this is, there's something here about kind of, if, for want of a better term, let me just say this, is that a kind of rampant, unregulated capitalism running amok, doing as they will, and nobody has power to stop them.
I mean, that's one of the things we have international capital, but national and local governments. And so there's a total mismatch between the capital that is able to pick up and move relatively quickly in an open global system and national governments that aren't structured to be able to deal with those forces. And so in that will create the opportunity, that will create spaces for exploitation, for things to be done that shouldn't be done, because there's a total mismatch between the way that international capital works and the way that governments function.
Charles?
Well, I think actually Ms. Lee with USAS has the right campaign and is more effective than everything mostly that we hear from our own government. We have a generalized system of preferences which can enter the Bangladesh, can enter duty-free into the U.S. market. It seems as if we're not cracking down at all. Bangladesh is one of the most corrupt countries in the world. The workers don't stand a chance. And, you know, they're the bravest people in the world. They're the hottest workers in the world. But they've been stripped of their rights. And they can be burnt to death in these factories. They can be, you know, killed as the factories collapse because of the enormous corruption. And, frankly, the labels don't do a thing to improve conditions. They cut it right to the corners. They take every single cent they can get. You know, garments, a $22.99 sweatshirt for Nike for children.
Mm-hmm.
Workers get paid 8 cents to make that garment. Now, this was in the Dominican Republic. But the wages that they pay for these garments are unbelievable. These are starvation wages. The wages come to 0.3% of the retail price. So there's tons of stuff that can be done, but we need laws. We don't need, you know, voluntary codes of conduct and all this kind of monitoring baloney. We need laws to protect the rights of workers, and primarily what the workers need is the right to organize, period, and to bargain collectively. There's not a single union in Bangladesh in the 5,000 factories. There's not one single union with a collective contract. That says it all. And until the government, our government, puts pressure on Bangladesh to let the workers organize freely and independently and to have a collective contract, I don't think much is going to change.
Well, we're destroying unions in our own country.
Sure, of course. Absolutely.
And Karen, so what should be the response? I mean, let me go back to what we were talking about earlier. You talked about Adidas, but how do organizations like yours, United Students Against Sweatshops, how do you attack this? How do you approach this issue? What would be your strategy?
Definitely. I agree with much of what's already been said, that rules and regulations need to be strengthened, and worker organizing is incredibly important in situations like this. And as you said, you know, we're going after brands like Gap, H&M, and Walmart, which are some of the largest buyers in Bangladesh, who are also producing in factories where the deadly fires broke out. And at the end of the day, the only parties with the money and the resources necessary to fundamentally renovate these factories for fire and building safety are the brands, and it should be their responsibility. And I think just the other day, the factory owner was caught in the border of Bangladesh and brought back, and there was a lot of anger over him, over criminal negligence of the factory, et cetera. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, the brands should also be responsible and accountable for these actions. The brands have put so much downward price pressure on the factory owner.
How do you make them accountable, Karen? When people say that, what does that mean to hold hold any of the brand manufacturers or the stores that sell these things inexpensively to us, so we put them on our backs? What does it mean to hold them accountable?
Definitely. The Workers' Rights Consortium is working really hard. They're this independent labor monitoring organization on a Bangladesh fire and building safety agreement. And workers and students and consumers around the world are pressuring brands to sign on to this legally binding initiative. And it's not a voluntary corporate social responsibility initiative. It's one that would really have brands negotiate with unions and with workers and hopefully strengthen freedom of association in these factories and have protections to organize and have a collective voice on the job to address safety violations.
I mean, one of the things that struck me, that maybe not be a direct connection, but it clearly is a connection between the kind of the power of the kind of capital in America and across the world and what happens in countries like Bangladesh and Dominican Republic and Indonesia and Vietnam and China. There was a piece in the Huffington Post today that said that the global super rich are stashing up to $32 trillion offshore. $32 trillion. And this is the kind of, I mean, and part of that money are those who own the garment world, Charles. And those are things that, I mean, and we don't see the connection, but to me there is a direct link.
Well, we have the same economic disparity right today as we did in 1928. The average CEO has 380 times the wages of an average worker. I was looking at this Canadian label, which was produced in the factory where the workers were killed. And she said that they didn't have the power to mandate that certain codes or regulations are followed in another country. Well, that's complete baloney, because their label is protected in Bangladesh and is protected in this Rana Plaza factory. In other words, these people don't even have a good excuse. I mean, they care so little that the stuff just dribbles out. And you know, this could reach over 1,000 workers dead. There were some women that were still alive in the rubble when a fire broke out. And they, you know, it was so horrible. The rescue workers were crying. They were working and working day after day to try to reach these women. And then a fire broke out in the rubble, and they were killed. Mm. Parents are going around begging, trying to find their kids, trying to find their daughters. Nobody should go through this. This is a crime. This is a crime site. This is not commerce. This is crime. And something has to give. And if we don't get laws to protect the rights of workers, and we keep having these stupid codes of conduct, we're going to go nowhere.
So Amara, again, as part of this conversation, the things you've written in the past, listening to both Karen Lee and Charles Kernahan, I mean, and you've spent time in the White House. It seems to me that for a part of what happens here, even though President Barack Obama has a hard time getting many things through Congress, it's part of the moral suasion of that office and also kind of on our elected representatives to kind of stand up, but I don't hear anybody doing it.
Yeah, I mean, I can't speak for the Obama administration.
No, I know you can't. I'm not asking you to.
but, I mean... yeah, I think that that's right. I mean, quite clearly, this is something that people care about. This is something the American people care about, because every time a situation like this breaks into public consciousness, there is an outcry, and usually some sort of dramatic action takes place, whether it be with Kathleen Gifford or, you know, every, 5 years we have an incident where, or not so even, how many years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, it was and still is with Foxconn and Apple, where the way in which Americans receive these products at deep discounted rates is exposed. And people, it's something that people don't like, and we want it changed. And so I think that there's enough public support around it in order to be able to at least be able to talk about it in a way that raises the profile of the issue. Quite clearly, you know, American labor would be supportive of them championing these issues. And, you know, it just generally speaks to the fact that everything costs. You know, it looks cheap to you and me and to everyone else, but someone pays. And what we need to do is to build a fairer system where everyone who has contact or is responsible for this global system of trade and economics, that we're all paying relatively more on this end as consumers, and people in Bangladesh and Vietnam and in China and right the way around the world are paying less in terms of their quality of life, in this case with their lives, so, and earning more. I mean, the entire structure, the way that we've built the thing, is producing these results that we don't like.
And he mentioned Kathy Gifford, of course. Charles Kernahan, one of your many claims of fame is you're the man who made Kathy Gifford cry.
Yeah. Frank Gifford, too.
Frank Gifford, too.
He wanted to fight on the airplane, so he was pretty out of it as well.
So I wonder if especially Charles, you and then Karen, in the few minutes we have left, could talk about where people can get more information, how we can get more involved, how we can address this issue.
I could just jump in real fast and say that one issue that should be on the radar screens is that Senator Barack Obama, Joe Biden, Hillary Clinton, Senator Dorgan, and 23 other senators, along with about 170 members of the House, did work on a bill called the Decent Working Conditions and Fair Competition Act, which for the first time ever would hold corporations accountable to respect the International Labor Organization's internationally recognized work rights standards. And so I think this is what we have to put up, because 76% of the American people agree that human beings should have at least the same protections as the corporations. So that's the big picture for us.
Karen, final closing thought in the last 30 seconds or so?
All right. I think students definitely have a real great potential leverage here with workers, and I think the biggest changes in history have been when students and workers join together to create change, and the argument shouldn't be sweatshop or no job. you know, is a third alternative. Workers should be able to organize and have a voice in the workplace.
Well, I want to thank all of you for being with us. This is important. We hope we'll keep following this to see what happens. And it's an issue that I think we have to keep in our forefront, especially those as we think about people beyond us and as we buy the things we wear. Karen Lee studies international labor relations at Cornell University, student organizer for the United Students Against Sweatshops. Charles Kernahan is director of the Institute for Global Labor and Human Rights. Imara Jones, economic justice contributor for ColorLines.com. Thank you all so much for taking your time with our listeners today.
Thank you.
Good to have you all with us. We'll link to all these people's work on our website. You can see what they've been writing, what they're working on, and how you may have an effect on this as well. We're going to take a very brief break. When we come back, we'll be joined by Dave Zirin and Ali Denois, as we look at Jason Collins coming out of the closet and what all that portends. Stay with us.